AERA has been around since 1922. And again, what we provide is information. We are the source for information in the engine rebuilding industry. We have a website, www.aera.org. And in that website is a member locator. So you can simply go to our website, go to the member locator, plug in your zip code, and you will find members that are part of our fraternity of professional engine rebuilders.
Well, Chuck, Happy New Year. It's been a while since we did one of these podcasts. How you been?
Been doing great. Happy New Year, and nice to be on this side of the show season and prepping for next year or the next show season already, right?
Exactly. And we got a real treat today because we got the head honcho. We got President Jim Rickoff is with us today. I was kind of thinking, you know, I was trying to think of different names, and Grand Poopa kind of came to mind. You know, I don't know if you used to watch the Flintstones when you were younger, but you remember they used to have the meeting of the water buffalo, and they had, you know, Grand Poopa was always the big cheese that always spoke. But no, Jim has really helped us lead AERA sort of into the big, you know, into the future for us. He is our source of information, and yeah, I'm looking forward to today. It's going to be a good interview with him.
Yeah, dynamic guy, big personality, great communicator, and lets us do our job. An idea guy, visionary. Yeah, it's actually a great opportunity to let everybody else get to know who we get to work with every day.
100%. No, totally agree. And we had everybody together this year. We were all at PRI. I guess since we spoke last, I mean, PRI and the EPIC conference. We had that going on in December, busy time. We gave away our ERAF engine. There was a gentleman by the name of John Lesso, and I know you actually drew the name this year. And, I think you even talked to him on the phone. He was pretty excited from what I gather.
Right. Yeah. We, had a great PRI. The temperature at PRI was great this year. Last year, we thought it was a pretty good PRI because, you know, the machinery row area was busy, but I heard out in the halls and some those other areas that they didn't have a great show. Now, it didn't matter. I mean, the people in the broom closet had a great show. It was an awesome PRI. EPIC. Can't say enough about that. We get good feedback. We've made some changes based on feedback, and you know, the goal is to get people educated, but we also want them to be comfortable and enjoy their time there. And I think we've really nailed all of those things. You know, the VIP party thing that we do at after the show is always great. So yeah, it's such a great time. PRI is a terrific show. I had actually even sent a message to Michael Good, the president of PRI. I said, we know it is the performance racing industry show, but it's also the people relationships industry conference. And so anyway, love that show. Agreed. Looking forward to it already again.
Yeah, no kidding. It can't come soon enough. And same with the engine that we're building again. So, I mean, we had the big block Chevy that we gave away at this one. And Jeff from Baldwin Racing Engines is doing up a 427 LS engine for the engine for this coming year, for 2026. I know both Steve Fox and him have been gathering up parts. We got lots of donations again for parts for that engine. So that one's going to be that one's another thing to look forward to. And your daughter last year at PRI, she was there. She was helping with ticket sales and everything. So it's a family affair, this whole engine thing. So it's pretty cool.
Yeah, she likes to be there anyway. You know, she's adjacent to the industry, but involved in it. So she's actually, she's a customer. And so that's great for all of us, you know, that the sports that they're involved in, they actually consume the products that we put out there. So that's great. And, you know, for this year, I think Steve's made a strong effort to make sure that we get out there a lot earlier with ticket sales and so forth, give people opportunity to contribute to the engine, because it does go to EREF, the funds do, and it's a great cause.
No, exactly. And then we got, like you said, we've got this year, we've already got a lot of our regionals nailed down for the year, with the first one coming up is Jasper, and that's right in your neck of the woods, and that's on April 17th. And I know you're, that's a, it's close to your heart, that one, because you've spent a lot of time there, you've worked there, and a lot of these folks are your friends. So tell us a little bit about what that one we can expect for April 17th.
Yeah, so the Jasper Tech and Skills is going to be held at one of their facilities. Really, they actually have a lot of space to host something like that, but it puts us real close to the manufacturing facility. So we're going to do tours of the manufacturing facility. And then we're going to have a Tech and Skills regional day where we have the typical four presentations. That'll be on a Saturday. So this is kind of a day and a half Tech and Skills regional, as opposed to, you know, most of the time they're a one day deal, but there's a lot to see and do, and wanted to make this a pretty much a bang up deal. Jasper's really excited about that. So they're very much looking forward to this, and there's been a lot of effort put into it already, and we got a ways to go. So yeah, we're definitely looking forward to this, this upcoming one. Again, right in my neck of the woods here in Southern Indiana. And I worked there for 20 years, and, you know, so the relationship's good. They're super helpful with us here as far as like images and some tech info and so forth. So it's relationships, right? They're important. Super important.
Exactly. Yeah. And for those folks that have never toured Jasper before, I know we have, and it's a first-class facility, and you will get to tour. And I know Steve's got a list that you know, that he's collecting of folks that which got to get on the list and get on that tour. But it's like I say, Chuck, it's an eye opener. It's a really cool deal.
Right.
Well, why don't we bring on you know, the boss man? Let's you know, let's see if you and I are still going to be hired after all this, Chuck. We might be. He might be kicked out the door, but you know what? So Jim Rickoff, he's our president, and it's a pleasure to have him on. He, like we mentioned before, he's been just an incredible leader for us, a really easy guy to work for. And you know what? He's like a friend. You know, you can just talk about anything and everything with Jim, and that's kind of what we're going to do today. And we thought, you know, it'd be nice to have you on, Jim, and we appreciate you being here. How you doing?
I'm honored. I'm honored. I've been wanting to get on your podcast. I'm like, geez, what do I got to do to get on this? I want to be famous too, like you guys, though. I appreciate it, team. Really do.
Yeah. And, you know, a lot of us have known you well before your 8-year A days. You know, you worked for Goodson, and I know you'll tell us a little bit about your background, but you've been in the industry a long time. So, you know, how did you get started?
Yeah, it's been a long time. I started back in 1984. I'm from Winona, Minnesota, and I needed a job out of college. And I applied for a customer service / tech service at Goodson. Goodson Shop Supplies, he's got Bizance owned it at the time. And I didn't really know anything about this industry. I came with an industrial education degree with a business minor and a concentration in construction. But I wanted to stay in Winona. I wanted to get with a young company and grow with a young company. So I took that. And so I had to learn. I read every book and visited hundreds and hundreds of shops. And it wasn't long. He didn't have a sales manager. So I morphed right into being a sales manager there, like after I'd been there a year. So, you know, I dove in with both feet and stayed my whole career, because of the people. We have a super unique industry here where people really care about each other. Competitors care about each other. They're willing to help each other. I've not seen that in anything else I've ever been involved in. I really haven't. And I mean that sincerely. We have great grassroots type people. that are very inviting and very fun to be around, and it's a great industry. So, and I stayed, and very happy I did stay.
Yeah, and we are too. I mean, it like I say, you kind of are the driving force behind our publication. We have Engine Professional Magazine. That's kind of been, you know, I know you were heavily involved with the decision on getting that magazine and bringing it into AERA. Jim, maybe tell us a little bit about, you know, what was your brainwave behind that? What kind of got you, you know, going sure. behind the EP?
I was doing the marketing. I was an independent contractor doing the marketing work for AERA. And when John Goodman was there, him and I sat down and talked about it. And I said, John, if we had our own magazine, A, we wouldn't have to spend a substantial amount of marketing dollars with other print publications. If we had our own, we'd be more happy with the technical information that was going out. And Goodman says, go for it. So it was really my project, but blessed by John. And John really coined the phrase application-driven articles. And that resonated with me, because I said, God, we've got to get articles written by the people that do this work. And nothing against professional writers. We use some of them even now. But they're engine guys by trade also. I'm speaking like a Mike Mavrigan, professional writer, but he's also an engine builder. So we, you know, kind of use Mike, and then we kind of morphed into grabbing good articles from industry leaders to now you tech guys write. Everybody on the AERA team writes articles for Engine Professional. All of you tech guys have that background. And we can write about things that make sense to our industry. And we can put it in terms that we call it application driven. Our goal is for any reader, our whole readership, be able to read that article, glean information out of it, take it back to the shop, apply it, make money on it, or save time or anything, making their shop better. So it was kind of a two-tag deal. I wanted to do it. John blessed it, but John had the vision of the application-driven. That really helped. And so I took that and ran with that, and that we started that back in 2008. Here we are in 2026, and it's going strong. And we provide that. It's a free trade publication. That's a part of our nonprofit charter. We have to give back to the industry to keep our nonprofit status. That helped us a lot, because anybody can get a subscription and we'll send it to you. So we are the information in this industry to the world. And if you want the magazine, get a subscription. Go to our website and plug that in, and we'll send you our magazine. So, yeah, been a fun project. Wasn't always so easy to start. I'll say it wasn't easy, but it's turned into being easy because of the loyalty of the readership and the response we have from our readership that want more. So we've got a good advertising base that helps us. And that's Engine Professional in a nutshell.
Yeah, and I think that's something that folks need to really understand and appreciate. Those advertisers in there make it so that this publication can be sent to you free of charge. Mm-hmm. This is a very, very high quality magazine that you've nurtured, and it's free of charge, and it's some of the best information. And I know we get kudos often because of the quality of the print, the quality of the images and so forth. And, you know, of course the staff writing, and we're so blessed to have Maria with her vision, and she keeps this stuff looking really, really great for us. But yeah, it's a great team effort, but it took some of your vision and you had to drive it. You know, that, there's a lot of great ideas that don't get driven out of the parking spot. And like you said, 2008 to 26, and driving that bus.
Exactly. And Chuck, you know, like, we get comments all the time about how folks use that as a resource in the shop. You know, that magazine is sitting on coffee room tables. It's there for, you know, because those articles, And that, like you said, Jim, the application driven, the idea is that you should be able to grab that magazine, read that article, and apply it in some way into your business or your shop. That's the whole goal. And
I'll interject there. I mean, we actually even have those connected in our process. So the guys who log in to look at specifications, we have application related articles that they can find right in the specifications and use that as an addendum to their, you got tech bulletins, you have specifications, you have articles with illustrations. So it's a nice package of things to help you with that product.
Well, yeah. And you guys really, the information in there we feel is so valuable, and we know it is. I think we're on our third printing of our technical resource manual, which is basically a collage of all the articles that we think have merit to get printed into a book. And then we send that out. We send that to all of our members. So they have another, it's a resource guide. And because they're good articles that have information that they need, and we categorize them so they're easy to find in that resource guide. You know, people say, well, print might be dead, you know, and I laugh because with that magazine, it's like Chuck said, it gets saved, it gets passed on. It's not just a magazine full of non-applicable type articles written by people that don't really understand our industry, and just full of a bunch of ads. It does have technical, good information. Yes, we have quite a few advertisers. The reason we do, because they realize it's good information. They want to be part of it. And I want to say this too. I'm very proud of it from a standpoint is we wanted to help create an image, a positive image for our industry. And I think that magazine has helped a lot. And I can tell you our advertisers thank me every year from the quality of the image that we create for our industry. Sometimes people like to pick on this industry. They like to look it back and say some blacksmiths, you know, your blacksmiths, which is, you know, just a bunch of BS. The technical people we have in this industry now running automotive and heavy duty machine shops, very technical people with the CNC equipment, the new equipment that we have, the more complicated engines, we're hardly anything but back in the dark ages. So I feel very, very proud of that because I get those accolades from the advertisers that say, thanks a lot, Jim. You're promoting our industry and creating a positive image for our industry, which it really is, but sometimes got overlooked.
So Jim, in saying that, when you're talking about industry like that, can you think of any areas now that are maybe a bit of a growth area? You know, are there certain segments of our industry that are sort of starting to take off that maybe engine builders need to maybe be aware of or diversify?
Yeah, I think when we ask that, the first thing that comes to mind is kind of medium and heavy duty diesel. I think that's definitely still a growth area. Depending on the sizing you want to get into, you've got to have a little bigger equipment. That segment I know is growing. And why is it growing? Because there's value in the rebuilt side. The new stuff costs so much to repower with new. It's very cost effective for people to get into that and have that work be done for them. So that's a great thing for us, and it's a great thing for the end user. So I think that's still very strong. Very strong. Yeah.
And I think if someone's considering, you know, the point you said, okay, it's bigger stuff, it's going to require bigger equipment. But the positive side of that, on the big machines, you can still do the small stuff. If it comes in the door, you can still handle the small stuff easily. You'll run out of footprint on your, if you have a little machine, you can only handle so big. But, you know, I'll just mention Republic Diesel in Louisville, Kentucky. They have the big 109 machines, and they'll take on a Kubota or something because they can still bore a 3-inch cylinder, even though they can bore a 15-inch cylinder.
Yeah, good point, Joe. Yeah.
Yeah. And when you look at the calls that we're getting on the tech line, you know, I know a couple of years ago we were saying, well, they're about 50% heavy duty engine diesel related. Well, I think it's even, you know, we're majority of our calls now are more of the injection timing questions, you know, diesel related questions, natural gas engines that, you know, have been converted, you know, that kind of stuff. I mean, we're getting a lot of those calls. So it's, I would agree, Jim. I think that is a definite growth area for us. And the tech department has made a lot of efforts to make sure that we've gotten the latest information, you know, so that we can have that in process and stuff. So it's, you know, anybody that's listening, if you've got any questions about heavy duty, Chuck, I think you could agree. We're pretty well equipped there. I think we've got a lot of the information that they're looking for.
Absolutely. And I think, you know, based on that, so Jim, okay, that's the market segment you're seeing some growth in. If people wanted to enter the industry, what advice would you give?
You know, that's a great question. And I just want to be honest because that's who I am. We'll take an independent truck repair shops that can't get their work fast enough from the shops that are in their area. So they say, hey, we ought to get into the head into a head shop for heavy duty. And, you know, that all sounds good, and I think it is good. But all I would caution anybody is if you're going to do it, then you better be serious about it. We do a magazine. Back before the magazine, we used to do monthly mailings, and we had a printing press at AERA, and I threw it out. It's like, so I said, we're not in the printing business. We shouldn't be printing. Printers print. Technical associations provide information. You can take that logic into this industry and say, well, independent truck repair shouldn't be a machine shop. I didn't say that. If you think you want to do that, I would say buy good, solid equipment, get the training you need, and be serious about it, and make that a separate profit center yourself. You're going to have to go out and get work probably more than just you can do. I would say, now, again, I'm not the expert there, but all I would say is, yes, there's opportunities, especially in that area. But if you're going to do it, get serious about it and train, buy good equipment, and commit to it, and therefore you'll have a good product.
And Jim, you've always been a huge advocate about creating opportunities for shops to network. You know, networking has been a big thing. Things like, you know, the EPIC conference and our regionals and that sort of thing. And, you know, I know back when I had my shop, sometimes you'd want to maybe, you know, I'm not going to tell the guy across the table what kind of, you know, block I'm working on or how I was able to get that in the machine for fixturing and that kind of stuff. But we've really just, you know, kind of things have opened up in a way that we learn from each other, and that's how we're going to succeed. And so, Jim, like I say, I know you're a huge advocate for that. You always talk
about those opportunities. Yeah, I'm really just big into networking. Back when we had our show, and now really we kind of gravitate to the PRI show, I can't express enough to get out of your shops, get to those shows, get to those regionals, meet peers in our industry. Like I said earlier, I've never seen an industry so willing to help each other. You're going to have shops just, you know, in your same town. Get to know, if you don't know them, get to know those people. Or even, you know, 200 miles away, they probably got tooling that you can borrow. They've experienced what you're going through on that engine right now, and they're probably willing to help you. But you got to get out to do that. You got to get out to meet those people. That's where trade shows, our regional conferences, and have so much merit to attend. Yeah, I could go on and on about people in our industry, very successful people, who said they wouldn't be nearly successful had they not met somebody else that's in our industry. So through AERA, they've met people. And I'll use one, Dennis Terrell, down in Hollywood, Florida. When he first jumped into heavy duty and medium duty diesel, he had met George Sotsky from Republic Diesel. That's when George owned it. And George helped him get into that industry. Now, Republic Diesel's been in it forever, but George helped Dennis Terrell. And there's 150 stories like that I probably know. They buy equipment. Geez, do I need this piece or should I buy this piece? I've got 100 stories that say, you know what? You need both pieces, buy them both. But that came from another shop up here. And those stories have been relayed to me and says, that helped me so much, Jim. I bought both those pieces. And here I am today thriving because of that networking opportunity and the peers that you meet. I could go on and on, but I think you get the picture. And we try to be helpful with that, certainly through the regional conferences. We do at the PRI have the Epic Show. That's where a lot of networking can happen. And then we have the VIP Industry Night on Friday night of the show, where we invite everybody in a setting where we have cocktails and hors d'oeuvres, and it's a relaxed, where we'll have 500 people that are in our industry. It's a great opportunity to sit down and walk up to somebody that you may have heard of or you know has a shop and just introduce yourself. So we try to create those networking opportunities, and trust me, they work. And really in my career, the same thing. As I was a sales manager, I met a lot of other people that helped me along the way. A lot. I mean, I had learning to do, and I know Ed Keebler, Randy Neal, guys like that helped me when I was a young guy, not totally understanding the ropes of being a sales manager with independent reps. Those guys come to my mind right away that helped me. John Gartrell, people like that, just because I wasn't afraid to get out there and meet people. And really, I met them at trade shows. That's where I met them. So very important. I highly recommend it. And you just can't go wrong.
Yeah, the old parable of it's not what you know, it's who you know, rings so true. You have to associate. And, on the tech line, we try to take advantage of that because there are people who have carved out a niche that, and we share that, oh, this guy does babbitting. This guy does, knows the nail heads. This guy is the guru on single overhead cam FEs and so forth. And I mean, that's invaluable. And you go out to these shows and then you can actually shake hands. And so, and we're still a competitive group, right? I mean, but it's not like when everybody was fighting for the small block Chevy, we could all manage that. Stuff's got complex. It's got expensive. So sometimes you just have to realize, hey, I'm going to pick a position and I'm going to do that. And if a customer comes to me and he needs that service, well, he might be able to make a few bucks because he was in the middle. He connected two people and helped that customer and helped another shop. And, that old Stephen Covey thing, synergy, one and one can equal three. And so,
Chuck, I like to say it's life changing. It was for me. It can be life changing. You will meet friends in this industry that'll become lifelong friends, and it can change your life. I don't know how much stronger I can say it because it's happened to me. So.
Yeah. And this is worldwide. I mean, Steve Fox and I went, we were over in England for a week where there was a conference over there, and we got toured around by a group of engine builders. I mean, just because we share that experience together, we're both engine builders. We have that contact and that's passion for the same thing. We got picked up from the airport. We got toured all around to the different shops. I mean, literally just because, again, it's just because of contacts in the industry and networking. So it can go a long way. Jim, you heard us talking about the EREF engine, that we're building this year. And we got that 427 LS that we're doing. And, we talk about this EREF and we talk about how, that we raise money for the EREF, but I know that, again, was one of your ideas, and you brought that forward to the association. So tell us a little bit, what is this EREF and how does that work?
Sure. This is a good example. Going back to the networking, Randy Neal got me involved with AERA when I was at Goodson. And Randy worked for Ed Fike, and they had Atlas Shot Supply. So they were competitors. But Randy said, he got me introduced to the board. I got on the board. He says, when you get on any board, he said to me, You got to do something. You don't want you just to come on and just sit around and don't do anything. So you got to find a project. All right. So I said, I thought about it. You know what? We don't have an educational foundation. I come from an education background. I go, all right, I'll get this started. And so I did. We, you know, formed a 501c3. You know, I was just on the board, but went to the president and got the 501c3, which is a charitable nonprofit. So you can take money in, people can deduct that. And then we got to get it out into charitable ways. So one way is education. So it's EREF stands for Engine Rebuilders Educational Foundation. We got some seed money from AERA and ARESCO, which is the for-profit side of AERA that, you know, they sell some of the wearables and bags and tags and things like that. And then I went out and started to find ways to make money. And back then we would do auctions at the trade show. So we started to get some money built up, and I'll never forget this either. Getting some help from people that had done it, and they're saying the hardest thing you're going to do is give money away. You can find ways to make money in this, but you'll have a hard time giving it away. And it is so true, and it's true that way today. So there's two ways to get money from EREF, and we have a website, and you can just go there. You'll find it through the ERA website. There's scholarships and there's grants. So that means that there's ways to give money to members through grants or scholarships through non-members. So you don't have to be a member to receive that, but you, what you have to do is show you're getting training in this industry. So it's still that way today. Sometimes we're looking for people to give money away, but we just don't want to give money away for somebody that's not serious about our industry. But if you need help, and I say to our member shops, especially them, if you have somebody that needs some specialized training and needs to go to a school or needs to take our online training program, sign up. We'll give you that money to help you get that person the training he needs. That's what that money is for. We do have a larger one, which is a $2,500 a year that we do in honor of Bill McKnight, that who had passed away, a big-time supporter of AERA, longtime industry leader. And that one we've given away this year. And the last 2 years now, we've gotten recipients for that. So that's what it's all about for EREF, is providing funds for training in our industry. Pretty simple.
Yeah, and I know at our shop we took advantage of that. I had someone that wanted to go down to the Joe, you know, to the Joe Mondello School at the time, and it was AERA EREF funds that we used to help pay for that. And again, it goes a long way for sure.
And now, like the boys were talking about earlier, that's where that engine build has come into play that we've been doing. We raised some pretty substantial funds with that. That all goes in there. There's no administrative fees that EREF is pulling out. AERA, we really manage that. So it's consumed with our AERA employees, or it is supported by AERA employees. So every nickel that goes into that engine that we didn't have to buy some parts or some things that we have to do, maybe some freight or something, all that money that we raise through that engine goes right back into the foundation and is distributed out to people that are looking for training.
No, that's excellent.
In fact, one thing I guess kind of bring up, what we do is every AERA member that attends a regional conference, we kick you back $100 per person. So if you go with five men from your shop, we'll kick you back $500. So we want to find ways for you and your employees to get to these places to learn more. And one is at a regional conference. So that's a pretty cool program. And yeah, we've been doing that for quite a while. And we used to do 75 just to the shop, but now it's to everybody.
That is cool.
Yeah. And, you know, and most of the time you're always paying for any kind of training, right? So you go to a regional conference and they're usually $25 to $40 to attend. We give you $100 back and you're going to get typically four presentations. Oftentimes they're hosted by a manufacturer. You're going to learn a lot of stuff for a, you know, very little money. Like say you're usually going to come out with, you know, you're going to get that $100 per person. It's, I mean, where can you get better training? That is, you know, it shouldn't be much thought into that. If we're doing a regional in your territory, you know, like you said, you have to get out of your shop and go see anyway. Sometimes you can't see the forest for the trees. You don't leave your own shop. You know what you know in your territory, but you need to get out and see and engage.
You know, I wanted to clear another piece. Sometimes I've been asked this. Well, some of them you charge. We charge for every regional a little bit. And the host helps control that because it helps pay for food costs and things like that. But the main reason we do that, because we got to get a head count. You know, if we just said every regional is free, we'd have three times the people signed up, or twice as many. That'd be probably twice as many people sign up. How do you get your food count? But if you make a guy lay down $25, $30, $40 per person, good chance he's going to show up. So hopefully that clears some air, because I used to get that question a lot. That's simply why, because it helps us get a true solid head count, which is important in the planning. We have to have tables, chairs, food, beverages for all those people. If you can't miss, right? It's a bad deal. So,
I'd have some
but
skin.
Again, like Chuck said, you're going to get that $100 back. So if you pay 40, it doesn't matter. We're going to give you 100. So,
agreed. You got to have a little skin in the game sometimes to make people commit. That's just how it is for sure. So Jim, I know we've been busy with a lot of stuff for 2026 and even some stuff already thinking for 2027. Are you able to share with us a few of the programs and a few of the things that we've kind of got on the go for the folks at?
One, I think that first thing that comes to mind is we're really trying to ramp up our training, our online training. We're trying to get into some hands-on training and run into a few obstacles there so we can actually get some hands-on. But we've got some things in the works there. But for sure, 26 and into 27, we're going to have a high-performance engine machining program. So our regular online training program, then you can morph into high-performance engine machining. And in fact, that thing is almost completed. And then after that, we're going to do a diesel engine machining book, manual, online program. So we'll have three segments of our online training. That's something that I know I'm going to work on hard over 26 and then probably into 27. I could probably let out of the bag that we're going to kind of rework the original one again. And that's going to be, we're going to work hard on that in 26 to get that done. Not a bunch of major changes, but just a little different view on how we present it. And then we're going to add for sure one chapter, maybe two, in your basic machining. And one is going to be on process. I'll tell you that. One thing, we know how valuable of a tool process is. We're going to have a chapter on that online training book. And Rob's kind of our process guru. And so him and Steve actually, and they'll be writing that and doing examples of how to use process. That thing has become so powerful. It's unreal. And how we didn't have a chapter in, we don't know, but we're willing to go back and rectify that and fix it. So those are the things I think that come to my mind, Rob, that I know we're going to be working on hard.
No, exactly. And like we talked about earlier, we've got we've got a tech and resource manual, you know, like that thing's almost ready to go to print. So that'll be coming out here pretty quick. So yeah, it's 2026 and 27. We've got a lot of things cooking. It's going to be some exciting times here for folks in the next little bit. So,
yeah, that tech resource manual, like I say, it's going to be coming out soon. And then I think, you know, because we know that we're going to have some of our school administrators, facilitators, and instructors listening as well. And one of the things that with that rollout of the adjustment to the old manual is gives them more flexibility to kind of put it in their curriculum in the order and the fashion that they want instead of what we had done and maybe changed a couple of times over the years. So I think that's a good way to really bolster that for each individual school is they have some more flexibility there. Cause that's been one of the things, Rob, that you've, been, it's a tough one to chase. Well, this guy wants this and this guy wants that. And well, now we're kind of in an a la carte kind of position.
Right. Yep. No, we've listened and we are making some changes with the suggestions that we've gotten. So again, that's what we're working on here in the for this year. So we're looking forward to that one.
Yep. You might have to shut me up as I get going on promoting ADRA. And I just want to say a few things, as we start talking about process and the value. We have 5 tech guys that are very smart that have all either machined. Case like Brian's, he was a designer of design, was in engineering at Velpro, has the knowledge of sealing. The information that we have in process, and it doesn't just end there. And you have access to those guys, toll free, by the way. It's like having 5 technical guys on your payroll that you have access to. If we don't have it in process, and the last count, I remember we had like 13 other databases that these guys have access to, our tech guys. If we don't have it, they'll find it for you. And where else can you get that kind of value for the price of our type of membership? You just really can't. And the other thing I want to touch on there is, some people say, well, I can just Google it, or AI now is going to replace all this. And, that just couldn't be further from the truth, because you know anything about AI, you start to search stuff, it's only as smart as the information it can gather. Okay. Now, Brian Roberts wrote a good article a few EPs back, and we should get that and get it posted again, about how inaccurate you start looking in for engine specs. You just start to Google stuff. And I think at times it might have been 40% right. You can't afford to be 40% right. If you go into the Six Sigma black belt type training and understand what one little mistake costs you, you as an engine builder understand, if I got a comeback, it's big money. And so the price of our membership is minuscule to get the right information. And I'm not saying you can't find it out there. You're going to spend a lot of time. And how do you know that information is accurate? That's really the beauty of what we've done. We've went out and grabbed information from manuals, from the OEs, from the big guys who help us, the big production guys. And we're all in this together to get the right information that you're going to need to help you succeed. It sounds like a sales pitch, but really from my standpoint, it's not a sales pitch. You can't be messing around with information that you don't know is right. So be careful if you think you can just Google it and you can find anything. You're going to find something. Read Brian Roberts' article and you'll find out that maybe 40% of the time it was right. Go ahead, Chuck and Rob.
Yeah, it has to cite a source. So if you go to AI and it has to cite a source, it still will give you an answer. And to talk in the current jargon of the AI world now, it will start to, kind of extrapolate some result or answer for you because, okay, if I look at all this different data, we're going to say that this is the answer. And in AI jargon, they're saying, okay, it's an AI hallucination. So you got an answer, but it doesn't mean that it's accurate. Because it wants to give you an answer. It's a question and answer medium, right? So you ask it a question. It doesn't want to say, I don't know, I give up. It wants to give you an answer. You just can't necessarily trust it. And you could do an AI, or you could ask AI to answer that question for you, and it would probably tell you that there's this thing called hallucinations because it tries to give you an answer. So do you want to rely on that, or do you want to rely on a source that's going to tell you, I got this specification from this manual, this source, or whatever?
Hey, AI, why do I keep breaking headbolts with this information that you give me? You're not helping. You're costing me a lot of money. And that's what we're finding. Yeah, those hallucinations. I'd rather it just said, you know what? I don't know the answer. Yeah, you're on your own. But it doesn't. It gives you this, you know, like Chuck said, hallucination. And then that's when we start getting the calls. It's like, there's something wrong here. Yeah, we need help. Yeah. Well, Jim, we appreciate everything you do. Like I say, you make our job super easy. And I'm glad we finally got you on and got you on the podcast. And like I say, you've been just a great leader for us. You've really put AERA sort of at the forefront as far as, you know, where we are with engine information, and especially at a world level. And again, we appreciate you. It's been great.
It's been a pleasure. It's been an honor, really, to lead a bunch of smart guys from a guy that I've rebuilt a couple of engines, but I probably have a pretty good understanding of how to do it. But, you know, I didn't live it. And I lived outside of that world. Probably have a good viewpoint of a bigger picture. Just couldn't be more proud to lead this organization. It's just been a real fun ride.
You know, Jim, I'm not going to let you off quite so quick. We all know you from, you know, the engine industry and whatnot, but we know that you have another real, real passion. And, why don't you tell us a little bit about that?
Yeah, well, I run retriever field trials, which are retrievers. I have Labrador retrievers, and you basically go in the field and they throw birds, and you run birds that they don't know are there. We call them blinds. And if they throw birds, they're called marks. And, you know, I love the duck hunt. I grew up in Winona, Minnesota, right on the river. And I laughed because all I wanted was a dog to go pick up ducks. So you get going. Then you meet guys, and I said, well, who can help me? I get with a bunch of guys that were part of this retriever club. So you're like, all right, well, we'll help you, Rick. I'll teach you how to train a dog, but you got to help us put this field trial on, because they had a national event, which just was 3 days, and that was fine. You get to throw birds for dogs that are from all over the region, and, you know, you get to see some really awesome dog work. And so then we run these weekend fun trials, and then you start to place and you get competitive juices start flowing. And then you get a dog and you go, well, I think I can go run with the big boys. I want to just run one of those license trials. Now you start running a few of those, and then all of a sudden you place. Well, the next thing you know, I'm running the nationals, and I was past president of the National Amateur Retriever Club, which was a 4-year deal, and put on a national, had to lead a group and was a field trial chairman for a national. So I kind of laugh. It's like, all I wanted was a duck dog, and I got into this thing. So, that is my passion, Chuck, outdoors. And I spend a lot of time in the outdoors. I have a passion for retrievers. And, that's what I'm going to do more of when I'm retired.
And you had a champion dog last year, I think, if I can remember, didn't you?
I had a dog, and there's usually about 130 of us that qualify for the nationals, and I did qualify. He's qualified for 4, almost 5 nationals, and I was a finalist. So I think there was about 10 of us at the end, and I was very close to winning. But in the national, there's only one winner, and the rest of you are called finalists. And I came up. And there's 10 series. You got to run 10 different tests. And in the last series, he kind of just ran out of gas is really what happened. I was that close to winning. I wasn't mad. I like the journey of that stuff. I'm competitive, but I don't go over the top for it. And just for me to be there in the last series with a chance to win was enough for me, really. I don't think winning would have been any sweeter. It's like, I trained that dog myself. And here I'm sitting there with the best trainers in the world competing against them, and I had them beat till the last series. And again, that's what I do for fun. And I guess I'm kind of competitive. Played football when I was in college, so I did like to compete, but think I've done a good job of just trying to balance everything in life. You just got to balance. You can't go overboard with work. You got to have some play in there. Got some personal time. I believe it's about five things to give back. You got your own personal time. You got your family time. You got your work time. You got your pleasure time, and then giving back to the community. So your volunteerism, and I've probably done more of that than I maybe should have, but you try to balance it out. But I do believe big in trying to give back. So right now I'm on the board of Retriever News. They have a magazine, and of course you get morphed into being the president of that, and it's just a volunteer thing. They have a magazine, and I probably have some experience with it. So I've been trying to help them, and I'll probably do more of that in retirement too. So,
well, that's cool. You got to stay busy, and it sounds like it's just like anything. That sounds like they've got your money, and you're coming back for next year, Jim. So that's, I think, they're gonna keep you coming back. So that's cool.
Right.
Well, thank you again for letting you let us pick your brain and coming on the show. We appreciate it. And
you bet. And again, I just want to say I thank the staff of AER. I couldn't be more proud leading a bunch of smart people. I've always gravitated to smart people. My mother was a school teacher, very smart, and it's just been a lot of fun putting smart people together that know way more about this than I do, but just helping them get the resources they need to give back to our membership. It's really all about what we do is our membership. They really own AERA. And so what we get the joy of doing is finding more things that they can use to make their life easier and better and more prosperous. So it's fun.
Agreed. Yep. Well, Jim, thanks again. We do appreciate you.
Yeah.
And thanks for coming on the show.
And I feel blessed now. I finally got on the infamous podcast and podcast. I call them the podcast boys. And so it's been fun. Yeah, it's been great.
Cool. Well, thank you.
Thank you now.
Well, Chuck, I mean, what do you think? Think we got our jobs for another little bit? Did we got through that? That was Jim's. He's just so many stories, and Jim has a lot of history in this industry. And I don't think people quite realize just, how involved he was with certain programs and things at AERA, and that a lot of it was his ideas. So that's cool.
Yeah, idea guy, knows how to get people pulling the rope the same direction, And I've said a tug of war does no value when you're going to all the different directions, then it ends up being a spider web. But yeah, he's definitely able to make the team pull in the same direction, and got great vision and hell of a fun guy to work with, big personality. And I mean, if Jim and you work with him, you're going to get some laughs. It's a great time. So yeah, we're pretty blessed to have the team that we have.
Agreed. Creates a really good environment, which is important for sure. Well, Chuck, if anybody needs to, if anybody has ever got any ideas for the podcast, by all means, we're open to ideas. If if you want to let us know, we do have an email address. It's eppodcast@aera.org. So if you ever have any questions or topics or anything, you can always email us, or any feedback and that kind of stuff. Also, we're on all of the podcast streaming platforms. So we would encourage you to subscribe, because if you do, then we're going to, of course, let you know when a new episode comes out. And we're also on our YouTube page. So any of the podcasts that we do, we put the recording on our YouTube page, and it's on there so you can also view it there. So Chuck, I appreciate it, man. You're always easy to talk to, and Jim is easy to talk to, and we'll catch you again next month.
All right. Keeping it real. Until next time.
Thanks, everyone. Thanks for listening.